Stand by. Your Steve Jones Show audio is loading now. SteveJonesShow.com podcasts are sponsored by Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street, Sunbury, the beverage supermarket.
Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
At Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury, Sunbury Motors, Key Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. And we are at the Chateau, the Sunbury Motors Studio. On Friday, it's Brewers Outlet. Every time I'm in Sunbury, I now go over and stock up. He has Corey and the gang. Make sure that everyone is well taken care of. You want selection? You have the best selection of imports, domestics, microbrews, soft drinks, fresh hot roasted peanuts, awesome selection of snacks, pickle bar. All at Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street in Sunbury, the beverage supermarket. We're with America's bitterest. When it comes to being bitter, is there anyone more bitter than you?
I think there is. I don't know where they might be right now, but I think there is. Hey, can you make me some money now? Yeah, actually, Girardi.
They're actually in prisons. All right, so
Girardi's going to make me some money this week. I could feel it.
You wonder why you don't have a bigger house.
If things go well this weekend and I can hit the superfecta, maybe.
There you go. Dick, one of the top horse racing writers in the country, without a doubt. Pal, welcome back, man.
Steve, what's happening, buddy?
All right, just hanging and waiting for the race tomorrow. And let's start out with, obviously there's an unpredictability about this with a mile and a half. What's the history and the lineage of this as to why there are three different distances and why the mile and a half?
It just evolved over time. They weren't always these distances. It's sort of become the modern way of doing it. There was a time actually when the Preakness was prior to the Derby, and the Derby distance has always been the same. But yeah, it just sort of evolved. But it's certainly been that way in the modern history. And Belmont Park, the track itself, is a mile and a half, so it's just one lap. And Pimlico doesn't really lend itself to a mile and a quarter because they don't have a chute like they do at Churchill Downs, so that's why it's a mile and 3/16. So a lot of it has to do with track configuration.
11 horses in this field, the second, third, fourth, and fifth place finishers in the Derby all skip the Preakness and they'll run this race. How does that figure into this as you view it?
Well, Steve, it's interesting. Prior to 2000, no horse in history had run in the Derby, skipped the Preakness, and won the Belmont. Since then, 7 out of 14 fit at exact profile, and you mentioned there's 4 in this race that are coming out. So, yeah, that's a factor, and the reason it's a factor is horses don't run 3 times in 5 weeks anymore at the top of level of the sport. It just doesn't happen. Except during the Triple Crown, so these horses that sat out the Preakness, they have an edge that, in fact, they've been resting, where obviously California Chrome had to run in the Preakness. If you're going to win the Triple Crown, you got to win all 3. So I always tell people the analogy I make, it's like a basketball analogy. The Heat, the Spurs, have each team has to play every game. In horse racing, you don't have to do that. It's almost unfair, but it's one of the reasons why it's so hard.
Exactly. What about the demeanor of the horse? It seems that there are a couple of horses where just in the parade walk get a little jumpy, get a little out of kilter. A couple of them are a little hard to load. They get antsy in the gate. This horse seems to take down the demeanor of his state. He's very calm, cool, and collected. Has that helped him in terms of energy and so forth once it comes time to race?
Absolutely. Yeah, it's interesting. The very best human athletes are the ones that can relax before and during the competition, and horses are exactly the same. And that's probably this horse's greatest attribute. I talked to John Service, the trainer of Smarty Jones, about this a couple of days ago, Steve, and The horses' running styles are very similar. They both have speed. They usually get great positions. Smarty Jones always did. So does California Chrome. He said the biggest difference is they had a lot of trouble getting Smarty to relax in his race. He was just so keyed up. He just wanted to crush the opposition. Where this horse can kind of relax, and when it's time, it's almost like he has an actual accelerator, and Victor Espinosa steps on the gas, and the horse takes off. So, yeah, that's a huge thing. Because if you use up energy either in a post parade, during the middle of the race, at some point before it gets to the critical time, then you're not going to be able to finish. And that's what this horse has been able to do in all of his races, relax and then go when necessary.
Let's talk about Victor Espinosa. And, you know, obviously, you know, you're talking about, you know, experienced jockeys across the board here. Tell us a little bit about him and what has made him the right fit for this horse.
Yeah, it's interesting. He's always been a good rider, Steve. I'd say a decade ago, he was probably considered one of the 10 or 15 best in the country. That would no longer be the case, and that's not necessarily because he's not. It's just he hasn't been in the big races. And Art Sherman was looking for a new rider back in December because Alberto Delgado, his previous rider, had gotten California Chrome into some trouble in a couple of his races, just put him in bad spots. The horse couldn't perform. So he said, let me find a veteran rider who's been in big races. And they were friendly from their time in Northern California together. So he said, let me try Victor. And obviously Victor's fit him perfectly. And what he's done more than anything, Steve, is just give the horse an opportunity to show his best stuff in all the races. You just don't want, when a horse is ready to roll, that he loses momentum, he's in a traffic jam, something. And he's been smart enough to do that. It's interesting, tomorrow, to me, he's the guy who has to make the early decision tomorrow. I think as I'm looking at this race, the way I would visualize it, I think the horse is going to win anyway. But I think his best chance to show his absolute best is for Victor to send him right to the front, get away from all the competition. Horses are like, I mean, imagine you're on the Pennsylvania Turnpike around Harrisburg at rush hour. Right, it's a little more traffic than if you're on 322 hanging out up by State College. Unless, of course, it's a Saturday, then you'd be at a football game, but then you'd be up in the booth, so it would be irrelevant. But the point is, horses are a lot like us. They'd much prefer to be not involved in traffic than involved in it. So I think if he puts them in front and just sort of gallops the first half of the race, I don't think there's any chance anybody could catch him. Now, the decision he'll have to make that quickly. If another jockey wanted to is outside, is desperate to be in front, then he's going to have to make a snap decision. He doesn't want to get trapped down by the rail. Then he'll probably take his horse back a little bit and come to the outside. But that's a critical part of the race. Watch that. The first 15 or 20 seconds is going to tell you a lot about how the race will be run.
I don't recall any point where California Chrome was any less than third in any of the races. He seems to be in the top three pack consistently. Almost doing exactly what you're talking about. He just gets near the front. You're saying he should just get out front and go.
Yeah, in this race, because the pace is going to be even slower, and I really think the only chance he gets beat is if somehow they get him into some kind of a traffic situation. I think he's naturally faster than all of the other horses, so why not take advantage of that? And horses, again, run their best when they're by themselves. Now, Art Sherman, the trainer, says this horse likes a target, and I would not question anything Art says. So they may want to set him second or third, as you said. But it's interesting, Steve, this of the biggest margin this horse has ever won by is the only race where he led all the way. He won by 7 lengths back in the San Felipe in early March.
Right.
So I don't think that was a coincidence. I just think when you have the best horse and he's by himself in front, he's likely to run his very best race, and I think that's the case tomorrow. And it's interesting, the last four horses that have won the Triple Crown, you got to go all the way back to 48 with Citation and then the three in the 70s, all four of them led from the start.
Right. Yeah, exactly right. And remember, that was the big thing about Ronnie Turcotte there. Like, what is he doing with the horse? The horse wanted to move, and he knew it.
Exactly. He didn't fight the horse. The worst thing you can do is fight your horse, because then he loses energy. But the neat thing about Chrome is he doesn't fight the jockey. He lets the jockey, he basically listens, and he, whatever the jockey wants to do, he'll let him do.
A horse that looked, I thought, you know, has had good moments during the course of the spring has been wicked strong. How deep a threat is that horse now with 5 weeks off as opposed to three?
I think if California Chrome gets beat, he's the most likely horse to do it. He won the Wood Memorial at Aqueduct. He's faced at Belmont Park. He's had the 5 weeks rest. The thing I like about him most in this race, Steve, when I watch the videos of his races, some horses love turns and they run really good. California Chrome is one of those horses, almost like a sports car. Wicked Strong is more like a truck, where he's much better on the straightaways. So I think a track like Belmont Park, which is 50% bigger than Churchill and Pimlico, these wide sweeping turns, I think it helps this horse. It's funny, he stabled at Belmont Park, but it's not that big of an edge because he doesn't train on the main track. He trains on the training track, so it's not like he's got any kind of an advantage over these other horses. But I think his advantage is the fact that he should love these turns. And he, as you said, he's had the 5 weeks off.
Yeah. What about the surface at Belmont? Is it a little bit different in terms of the composition of it as opposed to what you see at Churchill and Pimlico?
It is a little different.
It's a big sandy for a reason, yeah.
Right, because it has a little more sand in it. It's going to probably be about 80 degrees. I think the weather up there is going to be similar to what you're getting and what we're getting tomorrow.
Yeah.
They'll have to put a lot of water on it. The good news is by the time this race runs, and it's going to be almost 7 o'clock, it's going to have cooled off a little bit. They will have full with the track. Hopefully it's fast and it's not too deep and tiring. But, yeah, that's something the track maintenance, the crew will have to deal with during the day. But I would think by the time we get to 7 o'clock, it's probably be closer to 70 degrees than 8.
Other threats in this thing, because this race obviously has always produced some different winners over time. A couple of other threats that you'd look at that, when you sit down to put your exacta together, you'd put that horse's name in there?
Yeah, I think Commandy Kirby was second in the Derby.
Yep.
I don't think that was a fluke. On paper, it looked like a fluke because he'd never done that before, but I just think he was getting better at the right time. So he's obviously a threat. Tonalist, who won the Peter Pan Stakes, at the track, is stable there, is also a threat, trained by Christophe Clement, who's one of the best in the country. He hasn't been in the Triple Crown races, but he's won a lot of big races. That's an interesting horse. He's very lightly raced. He's only raced four times. He's got a great young rider in Joel Rosario.
Yes. Yeah.
Watch the beginning of the race, because I think Joel may want to be in front with Tonalist. So watch what he does from the outside post versus what Victor does from the two post. That'll give you an indication early of how the thing might shape up. Another, if you're looking for a long shot, the one Metal Count, I thought, ran a deceptively good race in the Derby. It doesn't show up on paper as very good, but if you watch the video, he ran better than a lot of horses run better than their finish because it's a crazy 19-horse field. He'll probably be 20-1, and he's another horse that might have a shot at a big price.
Right on Curlin's doing this 3 and 5 as well, and if I recall Johnny V's on him, he's been in the neighborhood. I mean, but what can you expect from him? Because I guess his workouts have been pretty good.
He was terrific. He ran the race of his life in the Preakness to run second, and he was another horse who had a terrible trip in the Derby, and they brought him right back. And your point about John Velasquez is a good one. I mean, it's his home track. He knows it cold. He won the race on Union Rags 2 years ago. So, yeah, I think that horse, there's nothing at all wrong with right on Curlin. He will be one of only three doing all three. General A-Rod is the other one who's going to go in all three. And he's been really unlucky in both the first two. General A-Rod was 16th early in the Derby, and he's usually horses in the top three or four. And then in the Preakness, he was making a big move, and the Billy Rhea Antonio stopped right in front of him. He lost all his momentum. He should have been third. So he's another horse that's better than he looks on paper. The whole point is, Steve, they all might be better than they look on paper. California Chrome's paper looks a lot better than all of theirs.
Yeah,
he just keeps winning all these races.
What makes Art Sherman, in your opinion, a good trainer?
I think he's seen everything, done everything. I mean, he was a rider first. He was around a great trainer back in the day when he was the stable hand for Swaps. And I just think the fact that he's been able to observe all the great trainers in California, from Charlie Whittingham to Ron McAnally and all the Hall of Famers who've been out there, I think he's just learned a little bit along the way. And now he's just a guy who's 77 who's finally got, for the first time in his life, the kind of horse that can compete in these races. And, Steve, he hasn't made a single mistake. I think he had a plan. He stuck with the plan. And here he is about 30 hours away from a shot at the Triple Crown.
You've had plenty of talks with him, and you and I have obviously, you and I have talked a lot, so, I mean, it's easy for me to ask questions about certain things. But it seems like his demeanor, I talked about California Chrome's demeanor as being a nice flat line. Is Art Sherman's demeanor is it the same way?
Very much so. I walked down to the Stakes Barn at Pimlico about 90 minutes before the Preakness, and Art was there, one other guy, a friend of mine, and we just started talking to him, and Art was telling stories for the next 45 minutes about life in horse racing. California Chrome was a little bit of it, but not much, just when he was a jockey, different places he'd been. And here's like this huge, tense final moment coming up with Derby winner to the Preakness, and you'd have thought he was sitting on a park bench somewhere, just sitting out there drinking, having a water, and talking to his best friends. So, yeah, I think that's huge. He just is having the time of his life. He knows it's a once-in-a-lifetime, and he's enjoying it for what it is.
If it were to happen, what would it mean for the sport?
Yeah, it's a great unknowable question, because 36 years is a long time. The whole sport has completely changed in that time. Back then, they used to get gigantic crowds on a regular basis at racetracks. That no longer happens, because 90% of the money is now bet away from the track. You can bet from home, you can bet at off-track places. So from that standpoint, the whole sport has changed, Steve. I don't think people are all of a sudden going to rush at different tracks. The issue is it's still an event-driven sport without quite enough of it. But short-term, every newscast, sportscast, Saturday night will lead with it. Every newspaper in the country will lead with it on Sunday. Cover of SI, cover of Time maybe next week. So from that standpoint, it's huge, because it's a positive for a sport that hasn't had a tremendous amount of positives. I don't know that it changes the bottom line at all, but it certainly gives the sport a hero at a time where we probably don't have enough of them. And it'd be kind of a unifying force, because, I mean, who doesn't like a good racehorse?
Right. And if he were to win, the next part is, if he were to run again, he would draw a crowd.
Well, there's no question. And I haven't gotten any sense they want to retire him and whisk him off the stud. And the good news is, might not be good news for them, but the good news is the bloodstock market is down so much that there isn't that gigantic $40 or $50 million payoff. This is probably a $15 million horse right now at stud, which is still a nice number.
Sure,
but the purses are big enough. Like Breeders' Cup Classic is $5 million. The Dubai World Cup next year is $10 million. The purses are big enough for the best horses to keep as an incentive to run them. They just took out an insurance policy on them, Steve. I don't know for how much. I suspect a pretty big number.
Yeah.
So that protects them in case something happens. I get the sense that they want to run them. I'm sure they'll take them back to California after the race. There's obviously the Travers at Saratoga.
Yeah.
Breeders' Cup Classic at Santa Anita at the end of the year. But I don't know that Art Sherman, I'm sure, hasn't thought past 7 o'clock tomorrow night. Getting to this stage is kind of giant. And I'm thinking whatever's going to happen, you're not going to see him until, I would think, August at the earliest. Because after this grind, he's going to need a little time away from the race.
You made an interesting point, Dick, about people. It used to be, you know, you'd go to the track, you'd go to Hialeah, you'd go to Gulfstream, Aqueduct would be filled all the time. I mean, you know, people went to the track. Now you mentioned, obviously, in today's technology, it's different. Is the health of the sport actually strong, even though the betting line, even though the money is coming in a different way?
Steve, not really. I mean, in pockets, yes. The Triple Crown has never been healthier. The Breeders' Cup is still huge. What we call the boutique meets at Saratoga, Keeneland in the fall, in the spring, and Del Mar in the summer, they're still big. I mean, they get gigantic crowds. But the day-to-day sport, it's just not there like it once was. There's probably too much of it. And so therefore, there's a lot of sameness to it. That's a problem. national body where you could have somebody who could enforce the rules. It's enforced state to state. Rules change from state to state. Imagine this. Imagine you're in Pennsylvania and you want to drive into New Jersey, but you got to stop and get another driver's license. Right. That's how horse racing is. You got to get a license in a lot of these different states. It's crazy. So that's an issue. It has a number of issues, but the good news is when the public is tuning in for something like this, this is still huge. I mean, NBC is going to get an outrageous rating tomorrow. I know they're really excited, and I would think the NHL people are excited too, because the lead into the hockey game is the Belmont Stakes.
Right.
So that they should get a big rating for Kings and Rangers. But yeah, the health of the sport in general, the analogy isn't exactly right, but it's not unlike boxing.
Yeah.
At one time in the 50s and 60s, boxing was among the most popular sports, as was horse racing. But what changed, Steve, is when lotteries became started to proliferate around the country. There was a time when the only gambling game outside of Nevada was horse racing.
Right.
That obviously is no longer true. There's casinos everywhere. So the competition for the gambling dollar has really changed since the last Triple Crown. And the sport hasn't been on television as much as it needed to be. There were actually people in the 50s and 60s that said, you know what, I don't think we want to be on TV because people won't come to the track. Well, think if the NFL had said that. The NFL said right. We want to be on television. Yeah. So they missed that boat. But, yeah, but right tomorrow is going to be the spotlight will shine on horse racing, no doubt.
All right, pal. You're the best. You know that. Appreciate the time very much. Have a good time tomorrow. Hopefully you'll get a chance to see history, because I know you've made the trip up there several times thinking it could happen, and there have been some near misses. So,
I'm 0 for 9, man. I'm looking to be 1 for 10.
There you go. Thanks, Dick.
See you, pal.
Dick Girardi, the Kevin Herr analysis in a moment. But we're going to take a break, then the news, and then a 20-minute rant by one guy.
Good, then I can have time to place my bet.
Well, have you decided what you're doing?
Yes, I have.
And it will be?
Coming up after the break.
On News Radio 1070 WKOK.
The best get-togethers start with a trip to the beverage supermarket, Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street, Sunbury. Why? Because Brewers Outlet has not only a great selection of beer, including imports and microbrews, but also a lot more. Brewers Outlet has water, soda, they roast their peanuts every day, and you can't forget about stopping by the pickle bar. Look for great deals on wine coolers and all your favorite snacks. Before you enjoy those special times with family and friends, make your visit first to the beverage supermarket, Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street, Sunbury. We want to see you in a Kia.
Sunbury Motors Kia. June has always been one of the best months to buy a new Kia from Sunbury Motors Kia.
Why?
Just listen. Sunbury Motors has 15 2014 Souls in stock starting under 15 grand. There's 26 2015 Kia Sorentos in stock, and we're already discounting them up to $4,000. 2015 Sorentos start at $22,913. You want real luxury? We got it with the 2014 International Car of the Year, the Kia Cadenza. Sunbury Motors Kia is discounting all Cadenzas $6,000. Remember, all new Kias come with a 10-year, 100,000-mile limited powertrain warranty. Sunbury Motors Kia has 84 new Kias to choose from. Where else would you buy your next new vehicle than Sunbury Motors? On the Strip in Hummel's Wharf, satisfying more customers, selling more cars. A tradition of trust since 1915.
Taxes extra, all applicable Kia customer rebates apply. KMF bonus cash financing to well-qualified customer.
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
And the Sunbury Motors Studio in the Chateau. Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, Kia Routes 11 and 15, Hummel's Wharf. And today, brought to you by our great friends at Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street in Sunbury. They do not call it the beverage supermarket for nothing. Imports, domestics, microbrews. The beer selection is off the charts. Soft drinks, snacks, fresh hot roasted peanuts, and of course the pickle bar. One-stop shopping. You need to stock up for the weekend right now at Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street in Sunbury, the beverage supermarket. And One quick note before we move on, and Sarah, of course, talked about this at the bottom of the hour. In fact, she's had it on the news all day. This is the 70th anniversary of D-Day. And unfortunately for some people in today's society, history is something that happened yesterday. What happened 70 years ago today, the Allied invasion of Nazi-controlled France, you know, by the United States, Canada. It's the only real big mistake in the movie The Longest Day with Robert Mitchum and John Wayne is they did not recognize the incredible bravery of the Canadian forces. That's probably the biggest mistake in that movie. But, you know, obviously Great Britain, the U.S., you know. In an era of nothing less than mediocre oration, 30 years ago today at the 40th commencement, one of the truly great speeches of our lifetime was Ronald Reagan's speech, and I'll mispronounce it in terms of how the French pronounce it, but Pointe aux Coques. And this is the area where the Army Ranger Assault Group charged, and it was their job to take the cliffs. And this location was in between Utah and Omaha beaches. And they, of course, were being shot at by the Nazis. They were also cutting their ropes that they were trying to climb. President Reagan, and this is the quote from the speech, and I'll make this brief, but when one ranger fell, another would take his place. When one rope was cut, a ranger would grab another and begin his climb again. They climbed, shot back, and held their footing. Soon, one by one, the rangers pulled themselves over the top, and in seizing the firm land at the top of these cliffs, they began to seize back the continent of Europe. 225 came here. After 2 days of fighting, only 90 could still bear arms. These are the boys of Pointe aux Coques. These are the men who took the cliffs. These are the champions who helped free a continent. These are the heroes who helped end a war. Strengthened by their courage, heartened by their valor, and borne by their memory, let us continue to stand for the ideals for which they lived and died. That was part of his speech 40 years ago today, and hopefully, you know, as that generation is dying off. I think the youngest, I think, that was on the cliffs that day, I think, is 87 now. That's the youngest. He was 17 years old at the time. Earl Claxton Warren was the youngest one on the cliffs that day. He's 87 now. So, if you know, we're able to do what we do today because of bravery on this day 70 years ago and bravery all across the continents of Europe and the islands of the Pacific. Should never be forgotten. Which, of course, allows Kevin the freedom to bet. I know you were very interested in what Mr. Girardi had to say, and I completely agree with him. I think California Chrome needs to go to the front early, and I'm talking, when I mean early, in the first quarter mile, go to the front and just run and just see how far it takes them.
Yeah, I also agree with what he said, though, about, you know, the horse wanting to be challenged a little bit too, and I think that would happen at the end of the race anyway. So
the horse wanted it? Nah, he didn't say that.
Well, no, I took that out of it.
He said quite the opposite, as a matter of fact.
Okay,
he said the best race that horse ran was where he went to the front and just ran. That's the biggest margin of victory he's had this year.
See, I thought he had said, or maybe I was watching NBC coverage and got confused over the last couple of races, but they were talking about California Chrome reacting to other horses, especially in the Derby.
He got to the front, he wasn't looking around for competition.
No, I meant on his way there. That's what I was talking about. Not when he was already up front. He wasn't looking around, but he seemed I know a lot of people, and Steve, you can feel free to correct me if I'm wrong. I know a lot of people that I read about watching the Kentucky Derby thought that he went a little early and still had enough.
You know what? I don't think.
Okay.
I don't think this horse can go early enough.
I don't disagree either. I think, like I said, I think to get out of the way and don't get tangled up in any mess that might happen in the middle of the pack.
I think you just get out there and you set the pace, and you make them chase you, because there's a tendency in this race, because it's a mile and a half, to pace it. The hell with it, run it.
You know, I agree with you. I like California Chrome. I like Wicked Strong a lot. I like that as a 1-2. And if you had to put a 3 in there, I'd have to go Riding on Curling and Commanding Curve for the 4. If you're going to bet on 4 for the Super.
Yeah. So that'll be tomorrow. But no, he did not talk about the idea of challenging and the whole thing. I mean, this horse has run no worse than third at any point in a race. And I think that I agree with him. Get the thing to the lead and just let it run. Let it run. Don't do it like the IndyCar where you're like, hey, how are we doing on fuel?
No cruising?
I mean, to be honest with you, the fuel thing is wrecking the sport.
Just I agree with it. 110% do I agree with you on that. Should run full rich and be done with it.
You know, I want to know who's the best out there and who's the fastest out there. I say with this horse, get out there, right? Set the tone. There are no rabbits in this race. Right? Sometimes you got a speed horse that, you know, goes out, runs the first three quarters of a mile, and it's like, holy cow, look at that thing go. And then, of course, that horse finishes last, okay, because there's no fuel in the tank. But I think, you know, get that thing out there and just let it run. Let it run in the clean air.
Before we get to Dave of Sunbury, I thought you might like this.
I don't have the connection today. It doesn't work.
20 horses have won the Belmont, started with their name starting with the letter C. There's your fun fact. Let's go to Dave in Sunbury.
Unbelievable. Okay, Dave, welcome. Great to have you with us.
Great to be with you. Well, a little birdie told me that Kevin had the bus to win, Chase that lead to place, and California Chrome to show.
Well, I think Chase has a little more breakaway speed, Dave. I'm not sure. I changed my mind on that.
Okay.
It's been a hard week for him because, like, he's so emotionally invested in guys.
Well,
and then
you try to
be realistic with him, and it kills him.
I didn't know if he was still working on a bus or if he's over there second base.
And he's real. And the guy's really, really good. I mean, really, really good.
Yeah.
But he'd have to do the next 3 years. He'd have to do something off the charts, I think, even to get 5-10% of the vote. He's just a really good player, and he's just going to go down as a really good player in his career, just like a whole bunch of other guys.
Well, it's like that whole infield of the Dodgers you're talking about with Steve Sachs, Davey Lopes, Ron Say, and
Steve Garvey, Bill Russell. That was a fabulous infield. They went to a postseason, World Series, the whole thing. Not one of them made the Hall of Fame.
Nope. And, you know, batting average is over 300. You can go on and on and on. And it still don't get it done.
Well, and it's very difficult. I think there's more. I think you're seeing more and more guys today actually vote for. You can vote for a maximum of 10 different people. I actually think you're seeing more and more guys vote for 10 guys today. But there's so many guys over the years that have been really, really good players that haven't made it. I mentioned Trammell and Whitaker.
Yeah.
Fred Lynn. Fred Lynn was a really good player, but he's not a Hall of Famer. You know, it doesn't mean he was lousy. Doesn't mean he wasn't bad. It just turns out. And this war stuff, I mean, like I said about Mike Trout, they're like, he should be the MVP over Miguel Cabrera. okay, Miguel Cabrera won the Triple Crown, and his team made the playoffs. So if they took him out of the lineup, where they'd still make the playoffs? Probably not. If you took Mike Trout out of the playoffs, if you took Mike Trout out of the Angels lineup, they go from being an under 500 team to being a more under 500 team. Okay,
well,
we're done.
The comment that you made about, you were saying about the bus, as each year goes on, it makes it harder and harder.
Yeah.
With other people getting in on it.
Yeah, well, it's going to be. It's going to. Yeah.
One other little quick thing to put out there. Did you get that shirt yet or not?
No, I haven't seen Kevin in a while.
Well, after the 4th of July, if something doesn't happen with that duck, I'll get a hold of Kevin and I'll stop at the pickle bar and get you some stuff and, you know, Brewer's Outlet on a Friday and stuff. Make a run just for you to bring you not only the shirt but some refreshments.
Ah, very nice. Better offer than I'm getting from the other guy over there.
Yeah, I'll see you in about a month. That's good enough for me.
Okay.
Man, all well, I you know, like,
the,
all hey, I know. Hey,
Steve,
I mean, I
get.
I mean, he's cheap.
Here's the promise.
I'll see you in a month. That's good enough.
Go live him.
Thanks, Dave.
Yep. Hey, that's a really nice shirt you sent me. I bought it with your gift certificate.
Yeah,
like, thanks.
Get over it. Hey, update from Pocono.
I'm wearing it right now. All right, let's take a break on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Nothing like Kevin in the studio doing the robot to this.
I didn't have my synthesizer set right.
Yeah, some big Pocono news.
That's right.
We're out of time.
That's good, yeah. Qualifying going on at Pocono as we speak for the race this weekend. Brian Vickers right now on the provisional pole with a 180.029. That is one of the fastest speeds in a stock car I think I have seen or heard at Pocono. That is under 50-second lap time. And he was running those also in practice, too. There were only two drivers that were over 180. And so far, with about halfway through the qualifying setup, Brian Vickers has the provisional pole. Kurt Busch in the number two slot, followed by Jeff Gordon and Jimmy Johnson. Danica Patrick is seventh. Kyle Busch, 14th at the moment. And Dale Jr. qualifying in the number 20 slot right now at 178.
And she's actually running better.
She's had a couple of good races here recently.
Yeah, so she's actually running better. Hey, LeBron James last night, as I mentioned earlier in the show, all this thought about fighting through it, playing it, if he was a real star, he could. I mean, look, as someone who has been plagued with leg cramps his entire life, I can tell you, you can't play through it. You can't fight through it.
You can't tough it out.
No, you really can't. You know, if the moment where everything finally relaxes, you give it a shot, but there's also the odds it's going to happen to you again in a short period of time. It's just, I find, though, the over-defensiveness of ESPN about it, about defending themselves, defending him, the whole thing. It's nothing to defend. You got bad leg cramps. You can't fight through it. I mean, the guy's a great player. They're talking about, well, their polls show he's not liked and so forth. He's not liked because of how he went to Miami. You know, the big show that they put on and the whole thing. That's the reason why. I mean, you have to have some common sense about this. And I don't understand why the network then, you know, that they're sitting there. If you really sit there and read comments on Twitter? Do you really do that? There's no way. I tell my class all the time, is don't read anything about yourself, pro or con. I tell them that all the time. I said, Gil Santos told me one time, there will be a point in time in your career, you'll be the first one to know you've done it right, and you'll be the first one to know you've done it wrong. And believe me, you do get to that point where you just kind of sit there and go, oh, man, struggled tonight. Or, oh, man, I shouldn't have said it that way. That was wrong. Or you just kind of walk out and go, you know what? You know, felt really good. We're good. Okay. You get to that point. You know, there are also mentors that you can go to, and they can give you advice about what to do. I said, don't listen to it, because negative stuff will then make you start thinking about, okay, I can't do that. I can't do that. Okay, stay away from that. Don't do that. Somebody's upset I'm doing it. Yeah, don't think. Just do it. And the other part is, oh, you're great. You're awesome. Oh, yeah. You're like going, hey, I'm great. Awesome. You get sloppy. Okay. And that's what gets me, is that why are they caring about comments about them? They're ESPN. Okay? They're the most powerful sports entity in the world.
Although I think it was a bad situation to have your biggest star not be able to play in the biggest game. And that's a situation where the air conditioning broke down. And that's just, you can't control that.
Right, but it's just one game. They lost the first game last year and won. I guarantee you somebody from Carrier is down there right now working on it.
Oh, I'm sure. I don't think that'll happen on Sunday.
Yeah. But I just found the reaction bizarre. There's no need for ESPN to defend itself. It's the biggest story of the game. And there's no need to defend LeBron James because I'm plagued with him. I can tell you, you can't play through it. It's really difficult. Hey, talk to you Monday.